Welcome to Fresh Takes on Tech. I'm your host, Vani Estes, Vice President of Innovation for the International Fresh Produce Association. On the podcast, we get to hear from people that are shaping the produce industry with solutions to our biggest problems. Join me as we uncover the opportunities and advancements shaping the future of produce through a tech lens. Welcome to Fresh Takes on Tech, where insight meets innovation. Today, we have a special guest joining us, Ben Sikora, the Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Vesteron. Ben brings a wealth of experience and expertise in the field, and we're happy to have him here to share his insights into the groundbreaking work being done in crop protection. Vesteron is leading a revolutionary approach to crop protection through peptide-based technologies. Peptides target pest issues and address resistance problems that have plagued traditional approaches. And importantly, they do so while prioritizing safety for workers, beneficial organisms, and the environment, all critical aspects of sustainable agriculture in the face of climate change. So let's dive into the conversation with Ben, where we'll explore the transformative potential of peptide-based crop protection in fostering climate-resilient agriculture. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, thank you, Vani.
Great to have you. So let's just start from the beginning. And can you elaborate on the specific ways in which Vesteron's peptide technology differs from traditional synthetic insecticides and biologicals, and especially looking at terms as far as efficacy, safety, and sustainability?
Yeah, absolutely. So these peptides target the same nerve and muscular modes of action that are existing today in agriculture. A lot of the synthetics today have challenges with secondary metabolites. They cause a lot of the problems, very similar to human health drugs where you may have an off-target effect in humans. Similar things happen with synthetics. These peptides differ from that because while they target the same receptor, they don't have any secondary metabolites. They break down into simple amino acids in the environment. And by having this degradation, you don't have any secondary challenges that would impact beneficials in the field or have all their off-target effects. This also allows us to have no residues that we have to worry about. So from an importing or exporting perspective, especially to Europe, you don't have to worry about residue impacts on the fruit itself.
Great. So how does Vesteron make sure that the insecticides are effective against the pests? I mean, you touched on this a little bit, but they're safe for the environment and everything else in it. Like, how does that actually work?
Yeah, so like I said, they target very specific receptors within insects. And we really try to ensure that that focus is on that specific receptor. And that's what gives us our novel mode of action. This ensures that you don't have any sort of worker exposure concerns, off-target issues such as birds, fish, pollinators. In our development, once we identify a candidate, we utilize our proprietary techniques to really optimize them for three things. Really yield, so we can produce these at scale and have a commercially viable product. We have to optimize them for insect gut stability. So if it broke down in the insect's gut, you wouldn't get the control that you'd be expecting. And really, that helps us optimize the performance. And then what we do is we basically engineer that into a proprietary yeast that then replicates our peptide through the fermentation process.
So they're developed different than chemical pesticides as well.
Yeah, it's more of a molecular biology approach versus an organic synthetic approach.
Yeah, that's great. I did a lot of work enzyme development and cellulosic biofuels and that sort of thing. So I get very excited when we talk about using yeast to make new products. Yeah. Very cool. Could you talk a little bit about the trials and testing procedures that you use to validate that it's effective, and what kind of studies have you done and are you doing with in the lab and also with large scale growers?
Yeah, so we broadly test each of our peptides that we hope to develop into a commercialized product globally through different populations of insect pests as well as crop production platforms. Generally, we'll start with small lab scale work in our labs, just from a proof of concept. We also work with a handful of third party researchers, universities, and grower associations to also help validate that in the various cropping systems in the market. Outside the U.S., we really have to demonstrate heavy efficacy, both outside the U.S. as well as in the U.S. and California. So in order to provide that robust performance on efficacy, you've got to do a lot of that work early prior to your registration. So for an example, SPEAR-LEP alone is a little over 500 studies across 9 different countries prior to and during our introduction into the U.S. and North America.
And why is it a heavier lift for California and Europe? What's the difference?
The burden of proof of efficacy is really what drives that. And it's not just Europe. It's really every country outside of the U.S. The U.S. has a little lighter standard in terms of demonstrating efficacy. You have to show some performance. But in order for you to obtain your regulatory requirements for Europe, Brazil, and California also requires this fairly heavily, is they want to see demonstrated performance and results in the field in order to obtain that registration.
And was there anything that was harder because this is a new class of product? And did you have to do more, or how's that been for you?
It's a lot of education with the regulatory partners that we're working with. So every time we go into a new geography for the first time, it's a big education around this new technology, because we don't necessarily fit in a box. While we're not synthetic, we're also not a microbial. And you're kind of in this middle gray ground that nobody's really regulated before. So both with the U.S. and Europe, Brazil, we're having the same conversations right now, is really just helping educate the regulators on how this technology works, the benefits of the sustainability claims that we make, but also the performance factors as a true replacement for some of the traditional synthetics that growers around the world are losing, whether it be from a regulatory perspective or just from pest management resistance issues that they're dealing with on a local basis.
So do they feel like, I did a number of work in Brazil on microbials, and I know how difficult it is to get things registered there. So like in Brazil, for example, do they feel like they need to create a whole new category to regulate you, or how do they get that through?
Yeah, so that's part of the challenge is in the U.S., the BPPD division of the EPA, which regulates a lot of the microbials and plant extracts, when we brought this to them, they were in the process of pulling together a new division called the Emerging Technologies Division, and that's within the BPPD. We were the first active ingredient with SPEAR to go down that path.
Oh, that's always fun.
That's by fire, but that is our defined path in the U.S. now.
Okay.
Every new active ingredient. The challenge is everywhere else in the world, we're looked at as a chemical. Mm. While we're looked at as a chemical, we're a reduced risk chemical. So that basically gives us the capability to have a much smaller dossier at the end of the day that we submit to the agency. You still have to have all your field efficacy work done. You still got to have all your regulatory requirements. But the benefits of our technology allow us to exempt out of a lot of the higher tier studies. So specifically, you know, if it's a soil dissipation study, those can go on for a long time, very expensive studies. We break down very rapidly in a soil environment. So you exempt out of all the tier 2, tier 3 studies that you don't have to do. So we have a much smaller package. It doesn't take us as long to put our package together, but you're still kind of at the mercy of the regulatory timelines in many of these regions of the world. So.
And besides California, does any other state have specific requirements, or if you're okay with the EPA, you're okay in other states?
It kind of depends. The first time around, you know, New York, Washington State, some of those states can require a little bit more efficacy trial work. And again, we really feel like this is a good thing from our standpoint, because it allows us to kind of stand out from the rest of the biological world that is traditionally more microbial or plant extract based. It allows us to show kind of the true one-to-one displacement we can offer with a synthetic molecule in these various crops.
So what products do you have on the market now, and how long have they been on the market?
So SPEAR has been on the market since 2020. That was introduced in 2020, mostly in the California market is where we started. We just here about a month ago received our approval with the EPA as well as COFEPRIS in Mexico for our second active ingredient, Basin Flex. We hope to have that available, ready to go for growers in 2025.
And is that second active ingredient, is it crop specific or pest specific? What's the difference between the two?
it's essentially a new mode of action, right? So our goal is to be able to offer growers, whether you're an apple producer or a tomato producer, a series of peptide active ingredients that you can now rotate between to have basically make sustainability claims on your crop, but also allow for resistance management for the active ingredients they still do have to ensure that you don't lose those AIs in the process.
So you rotate?
You rotate in an IPM program. There are not a lot of new novel modes of action coming to the market right now. And it's going to be much harder as we go into the future, especially with the restrictions that are coming out of Europe. Residue levels are going to continue to drop. They're going to get closer to zero as you go forward. So I think really looking at new technologies and finding a fit into their operations is really what's going to be critical for a lot of growers in the future.
And what crops are you in?
So our core right now is really a lot of the high-value tree fruit, tree nuts, traditional veg crops along the coast or in the southeast. We are just starting our foray into row crop, specifically into soybeans in the mid-south. And then where we've seen the biggest adoption and growth has really been in the tree nut and the palm fruit market here over the past, call it 2-3 years in commercialization.
And why do you think that is? I mean, usually people go the other direction because they say, oh, there's so many acres in broadacre crops, but you guys focused, music to my ears, but you focused more on the produce industry first. And why did that happen?
You know, they've been using a lot of the same chemistry for the past decade, right? I mean, if you look at an almond producer, they make generally 2 hull split applications in an almond crop every season. And for the past 15 years now, I believe, it's been a rotation of methoxyfenoside and chlorantraniliprole. And when you're looking long-term at resistance management of navel orangeworm and having a more productive IPM program in place to help sustain some of your beneficials in the field to control your mite populations, technologies like Spear are really a new solution for that. And that's really where we're seeing a lot of our growth come from, are from cropping systems where it's been a traditional, you know, 2-3 AI product rotation for the past decade. And in 2024, we finished up with about a 10% market share in pistachio all split.
Oh.
In the California veg market, we're somewhere between 6 and 8%. And in that situation, it's very different. It's very much focused around managing diamondback moth resistance and having a new mode of action that they can work into those sprays in brassica crops along the coast. So really depends on the cropping system and what the challenges are, but that's really where we're seeing the success of Spear.
Is the application the same as a chemical? Do they have to do anything different? Does the product have to be handled any differently?
No, and this is one of the beauties about these peptides. They're very stable. There's no special handling. There's no cold supply chain that's tied to it. These can be handled just like a traditional synthetic. It can sit in a warehouse in Fresno, and you've got a good solid 2-year shelf life, you know, in the eyes of the EPA. From an application technique, this is a drop-in for any sprayer that a grower uses. It can be applied by ground or by air. And we see very good results in both application techniques, but very flexible. We price at parity to the grower. You know, a grower shouldn't have to pay a premium for new technology that they want to work into a rotation. So we try to be, you know, almost, like I said, a one-to-one displacement for a traditional synthetic AI in the marketplace.
And are you selling through the wholesale retail channel, or are you selling direct, or how are you selling?
Yeah, no, we have some great distributor partnerships with the main nationals, as well as some key independents, depending on the geography. We do have a little bit unique of a go-to-market strategy. So we have a team on the ground that's really focused on, you know, helping train our distributor partners in being able to sell this.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely a value-added sell. So it's technology, so making sure they're comfortable and have the tools they need. But then we also have a sales team on the ground that's really focused at talking to the grower, the independent PCA, any other influencers, processors, those type of folks, to, again, educate them, do on-farm demos specifically with the grower in their operations so they can see how this would fit into the rotation. And their whole focus is really generating that pull at the grower and the independent consultant level.
Yeah, I would think that just collaboration with the farmers is super important. And so how do you engage with the grower and really understand their needs and kind of integrate those insights into product development? And how does that happen?
Yeah, so with this go-to-market approach that we have, our call them strategic account managers, they really focus in on that grower level to get on-farm demos in place and really show how it works into their operation specifically with whatever grower they're working with. What that also does is it gives feedback the other way, to your point. It really gives us insight as to, okay, maybe this isn't an ideal formulation for this setting, or maybe there's some nozzle differences that could deliver the product more efficiently for that grower. And it's really given us some insight. And now we've got a commercial advisory board that we've developed and really try to get information from them on a regular basis.
Oh, good.
Feedback on how this is performing in their fields and their operations. What benefits are they seeing? And it's giving us a lot of feedback, especially not just for Spear, but also as we start to look at Basin and our third and fourth AIs down the line on how we need to bring those to market more efficiently.
What's your biggest challenge of acceptance by growers? Is it the novelty or the not understanding or afraid it's not going to work? What are some of the big challenges?
So the biggest challenge is just being able to educate enough people. You know, we're a small company. I think we're a company of 65 people right now. So it's very hard just to make sure you're getting that message across a vast audience so they understand it. But then the other thing that you have kind of working against you in the same point is 30 years of preconceived notions around biologicals, right? And really, until a grower sees it in their operation, sees the performance of, you know, walking that field with one of our account managers and seeing the pests die in the field, essentially, that's when you have a believer, and the customer retention is very high at that point. And I think this has been a barrier for a lot of startups in the past, is being able to, you know, once you get on farm, being able to retain that grower year after year. And we're now coming into year 5 with a very high, above 75% retention rate with the growers that are using the technology. And every year those acres continue to grow. So from that standpoint, you know, I feel really good what the team has gotten us to this point. And I'm really excited kind of for the next foray into additional crops, additional regions of the world, to really get this technology into, you know, more growers' hands.
I found, and I've commercialized a lot of different kinds of non-traditional products. And coming from a science background, I always wanted to explain the mode of action and like how everything worked and got very technical about it. And I realized that was one of my first learnings in my first job in my career, is that that's not how you sell. You know, I mean, you may have a few people you sell that way too, but mostly it's benefits. So how do you kind of, I mean, you kind of have to explain what a peptide is, but how do you balance that wanting to really geek out on how cool the science is to just really communicating the benefits?
Yeah, I think that was a little bit of a learning we had early on as well. I mean, at the end of the day, the grower wants to see results,
right,
at a good price, right? And that's ultimately what comes out of a lot of our market research, is if I'm seeing dead bugs, I'm going to believe in the technology a little stronger than I would had it just been, you know, somebody coming out and telling me about it for the first time. So a lot of our focus and the reason we put these account managers on the ground is to show that real world performance in a very specific operation. As they get accustomed to it, the technology is very exciting to growers. I mean, the premise of these peptides are all venom-based, so the grower really understands, you know, why spiders are beneficials in their fields, and they see the value of what we're trying to do with that venom base in these new insecticides. So it's a very easy analogy to bridge once they understand how the product's going to work and they see how it works in their field.
Do you have any other competitors or companies that are using peptides, and are you IP protected so that other people can't? Or
yeah, so our R&D team has done an amazing job building a very nice IP backyard. So we own how these get delivered. We have a lot of the process patents that we have in place right now really protect us for the foreseeable future of this technology, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. There are some other companies working in peptide parallels, but not necessarily in straight up control. There's a company out of Belgium, Biotalis, that's working on some larger antibody fungicides. And there's a handful of companies that are out there that are more focused on the biostimulant or biofertilizer side of the peptide world. So when it comes to actual control, we're definitely blazing a little bit of a new trail here.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So as we talked about, the series of the podcast of this whole season is focused on climate smart. So how does Vestaron's products help with biodiversity and with climate change overall?
You know, obviously with crop protection products, it's a little bit harder from a climate standpoint, but we're really focusing on being adaptable to the biodiversity within these fields. Climate change is going to result in more pest pressure, mm-hmm. more disease pressure over time, more selectivity when it comes to possibly to herbicides. So being able to have these new environmentally smart technologies, they can reduce the reliance on traditional synthetics, essentially allow resistance to be pushed out further, possibly. But then utilizing these peptides in an environment to where we're soft on beneficials, pollinators, we really work complementary to a lot of the new technologies that many of the produce growers are using now. So when you look at things like mating disruption and pheromones and a lot of these monitoring systems, being able to apply a peptide versus a synthetic when that threshold gets too high to where the mating disruption isn't effective anymore, bring those populations back down, we're a much better alternative because now you leave a lot of your beneficials still in that field that are helping mm-hmm. with secondary pests like mites and thrips and things like that. So for us, it's really being able to maximize the beneficials, handle those pests, secondary pests, and ultimately promote a stronger ecosystem within that operation.
So my last question, looking ahead, what are your plans for further innovation and expansion in crop protection? And are there any upcoming projects or developments that you can share with us?
So Europe is big for us. You know, we're waiting. It's a long regulatory process in Europe. But we just did receive our first emergency uses in Europe here just recently. So we have an emergency use for tomato growers throughout the Mediterranean.
Oh, great.
Allowing for control of a very big problem pest over there. It's a tomato leaf miner, Tuta absoluta. So we're now getting this technology for a small period of time and per season into growers' hands where they can now utilize it in their rotation to help with the resistance issues that they're facing there. So we'll look to expand that as we go in the coming seasons. And we'd also, just like I said earlier, we received our first approvals for Basin Flex, which will be our second active ingredient, both in the U.S. and Mexico. And those will be coming to growers in 2025. You know, in the coming months, we hope to announce a few other key partnerships that will help open up to new crops and new geographies as we go forward with this technology.
Oh, great. Are there new products? Do you have a robust R&D team that's continuing to look on different modes of action and new types of products down the line?
Yeah, so our R&D platform is fairly robust. You know, the company was founded back in 2005, believe it or not, and really spent the first decade trying to understand how to solve the big complexities of utilizing these peptides in agricultural food systems. The big ones were obviously like the regulatory path that we've talked about a little bit, but then solving some of the bioavailability concerns because these molecules are bigger.
Mm.
They solve that. And then how do you produce them at cost, at a scale to where, you know, you can have a viable business ultimately at the end of the day. And really that took them the first 10 years to figure that piece out. Now that they do, we've got a very good platform in terms of identifying new molecules that target some of these specific neuromuscular receptors that we talked about. And the hope is to essentially reset that resistance clock on a lot of these proven receptors in agriculture with these new safe, environmentally friendly peptides as alternatives.
Great.
Yeah.
Anything else you want us to know or...
I think we hit on a lot here. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm very excited about the work that you're doing. I've been tracking you guys for a long time. So I'm glad to see stuff come to market and very needed technology. So thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's it for today's episode of Fresh Takes on Tech. This material is based upon work supported by the U.S. Department of Agriculture under the Climate Smart Commodities Grant. The USDA is an equal opportunity provider, employer, and lender. See you next time.
Bayer supports fruit growing and horticulture growers with their wide range of offerings from seeds to crop protection products and digital solutions, empowering growers to produce healthy crops and high quality, abundant yields. You can learn more about their complete portfolio at cropscience.bayer.us.